Money Show. Shapeshifters.
Well, I've long wanted to do this interview because I've never seen a cash machine like it. Being a father, being a parent, you too will know just what it is like having to go into Baby City for that first visit. You're pregnant, or as a couple, you're pregnant. You're looking forward to welcoming this little bundle of joy, and you think you've got it all sort of sorted out in your brain. But the one thing you haven't factored in is just how much stuff babies need. So you go to Baby City and you come out pale and pasty and weary and weak at the knees. And that's all courtesy of Michael Anaroff, who is the managing director at Baby City, a family business. When did you start, Michael?
Hi, Bruce. Thank you for having me on the show. Baby City was conceptualized in 1989, we started in 1992 when I managed to convince my dad that that was the direction that we should go and move. So that's when we started. I didn't think we tortured you so much. I thought we helped you along the road.
I am a cheapskate, unfortunately. So it's not you. It most certainly is me. And then also, when you go in, and then, you know, obviously entry level's not good enough. You've got to buy up because there are these glorious arrays with buttons and things that you probably never end up using, actually, because, you know, you're just too damn exhausted. But yes, and in future, please, when you tell the story, could you say that Baby City was conceived in 89? It just appeals to my sense of humor.
Absolutely.
More.
Absolutely. A long incubation period, longer than normal.
No, exactly. A three-year period, gestation period of 3 years. What was the family business before Baby City? I mean, you had to convince
your dad. It was actually a baby boutique. We had six stores ranging between 80 to 120 square meters. And I had reached a critical path in my career as a CA. And decided that I would leave the profession and join the family business, which I'd worked from the age of 10. And I had an interaction with a consumer in one of the stores that I had opened. And the consumer made me understand that it didn't matter how cheap I was and how good my service was, the bigger stores gave her the impression that they were better than I was. And she'd made a decision to buy there and pay probably about 20% more. So I went back home and told my dad we're changing our business. And he says, what do you mean? And I said, well, we're changing it. And it was almost inconceivable because it was very profitable as a boutique. And there was no reason to change. So I had to convince him that the world was changing and that we had the ability to compete with the big boys. We had to move with the way things were, and that's become specialists, which at that stage was pretty rare. That was where the idea was founded. So it's actually a simple consumer interaction. In fact, most of our dealings over the years and the changes in direction have been as a result of consumer interaction. Which has always been our strength, and that's listening to the consumer that's out there on the floor. And that's where Baby City was conceived. And in fact, just to touch on a point that you raised, we decided that we were going to focus on quality, because ultimately every person wants quality. So we decided to sell the Mercedes at a reasonable price, rather than a cheap Chinese car at a normal cheap price. So that was the philosophy that we came from. And with our background, that made a lot of sense because everybody aspires to have better and not necessarily pay more. And that was how we got to our everyday low price. Especially that we were founded in Natal, we decided we want to set a certain pricing that is appealing to everyone and allows you to see the true value proposition by comparing brand with another branded product rather than your own cheap imports or cheap OEMs, which can't compare to branded products. So, you know, value proposition is seen. That was essentially some of the factors that made us move in the direction that we did.
It's such an interesting, I mean, there are multiple points that I want to pick up with you just from that story that you tell there. The father and son relationship in the family business, or the father and daughter, the parental child relationship in family business, is often one that is quite fraught with complexity. You've got parents who have established a great business. They see absolutely no need to change. You've got the go-getter kids who've been educated, who see opportunity, and that's when the conversation starts. I mean, how hard a job was it to say, you know what, we need to go from boutique to supermarket? Just have a look around you, see what that nice Mr. Ackerman is doing, see what the nice Mr. Basson is doing at ShopRite and at Checkers. We need to be in that space.
My dad and I had very, very different capabilities. And the one thing that our hardships when we started in this country did was unify the family. And there was a respect for each other. My father was a trader par excellence, personality and a larger-than-life figure that one doesn't meet very often, and one doesn't often have the privilege to work with. And equally, with my working from an early age and from doing the books from the age of 11 and preparing audit papers for the auditors from the age of 12, my father had a certain respect for me. So we recognized each other's strengths, and he gave me my opportunities. And believe me when I tell you that when I moved from auditing to the family business, I took an 85% cut, yeah, and in my salary. I think the floor staff was earning more than I was. And the idea was that I had 3 months and make a difference. If you don't make the difference, well, then you go back to auditing if that's what you want. And interestingly enough, I'm doing it with my daughter as well. I've done it. She joined me about 4 years ago. And probably the biggest fight I've ever had with my late dad was actually about the way that I was treating her. And I kindly reminded him that I earned my respect the way I was treating my daughter.
I hope in the 21st century, she wasn't 12 and you were getting her to do your audit report.
No.
Look, it was
circumstantial. It was really circumstantial. our situation was totally circumstantial. But my dad did respect me, and I respected his strength as a trader. And there did come a time when the shift of power, the power shifted. But he was an exceptional trader, a people's man, an extremely generous person with his wisdom and advice, which I have hung onto till today and still do the same thing that I was taught and brought up with. And at the end of the day, it's a value system and it's a respect. And I'm only talking about my father, but I mean, my mom was also involved. My sister was involved, especially in the early stages, in a much bigger way. And we were all together fighting the fight for Baby City. And to be honest with me, for me, it was a bit of an obsession to achieve what I wanted to, because I was told I would never succeed. The other, if you would call it opposition at the time, was significantly larger than I was. It was probably the pimple on the elephant's backside.
It's lovely tales, and I'm enjoying the discussion with Michael Anaroff this evening, the managing director at Baby City. They've taken the decision to sell to Dis-Chem, and it's a great opportunity to talk about this family business, which has grown from 6 boutiques, a KZN-based business, to a national chain. We'll talk about that and how hard it is to sell a family business. And another thing I want to pick up on, and this is important for the time that we are in now, that what is the year that this business actually starts, and what is the significance of that? I'll reveal a little bit more in a moment.
The Money Show. Shapeshifters.
Michael Anaroff is the managing director at Baby City, and we're talking about family businesses, the dynamics, and as a young man coming into the business, started and run by dad, and saying to dad, you know what, we need to, what's the word we use now? pivot. This is 1992 when you start. I mean, 1992, all hell is breaking loose in South Africa. We're in deep recession. There's a political transition happening that could go either way. Yet you're looking at expansion. I mean, what kind of lunatic chartered accountant are you really in those days?
the one that went wrong.
Or the one that went right in this particular
case. Yes. It depends which side of the equation you're looking at it from. The reality is that I had a dream, and my dad and I had always said, going back in time when I was an absolute youngster, it would be nice to have a store that would provide it all. And I suppose that customer interaction was so, it resonated with me so much. I think I can't even tell you how excited I was to drive back home and actually go talk to my father to change, to introduce this concept. It didn't matter what was around me. The idea resonated with me. I saw the fact that I could challenge the big boys and that we could offer better. We could offer a better value proposition. And I think more so, I think the difference between us and the general at the time was that nobody really perceived that a first-time mother and a first-time parent today, because I think we also revolutionized in making men come into stores. We used to go and fetch men from outside the doors of our stores and saying, come on, you don't have to just stay here to pay. You can come in and we'll share the experience. So we did that. But I think I really believed in the idea. My father, I think his biggest reluctance was changing course when you have something that's working out and it's got no reason, there's no reason to change direction. But I knew we could compete. And also I knew that people were thrown into the deep end. I mean, as a first-time parent, we don't have extended households anymore. We don't have grandma and your mother at home, and we don't have your mother having a child at the same time as your daughter did, in like it used to be in the old days. So people are thrown into this brand new world, no one to hold your hands, no one to guide you. And ultimately, that is what we were doing in the boutique environment, and I felt we could do it on the bigger environment and take the baby to another level, so to say.
So where were we buying baby stuff before Baby City started? I mean, was it an aisle in a supermarket? I mean, were there specialist shops at the time?
So it was interesting. While my dad and I were busy fighting each other on the idea, another competitor came in the market who no longer exists. They had picked up on the idea from America about a year before we opened, and they set up shop and tried to make it happen, but very much in a warehouse style with little service and no real energy behind it in terms of, yes, energy in terms of selling, but not with service. And that was where we came in differently. We decided brands, EDLP, and service, which came literally at no cost, if you want to call it, coming from a boutique where you go the other route, where you tend to have a higher markup, but your service justifies the higher markup. So we went in that direction.
Now, I thought that I had a typo on my running order, Michelle, but you're far too well-mannered, Michelle, because I've been calling you Michael all the way through. And Will Wortham Ames, and I've just probably mangled Will's name now as well, Wortham Ames, says, Bruce, it's pronounced Michelle, not Michael. So I apologize for that. You're far too well-mannered. You see, your customer service ethic goes even to being a guest on the radio. I apologize. This 1992 factor, this fact that you take customer interaction, the fact that you start this business in 92, and the next big, massive change that you bring, and that is the sale to Baby City, happens in the next big period of South African uncertainty. I mean, you guys, you Anaroffs, love trading through chaos and craziness. I mean, you're okay, so going for another massive change right now.
Yeah, I'll stop being diplomatic. It's actually Aronoff. Sorry about that one. I had to throw it in. Michelle Aronoff.
We could have saved so much time. Sorry, Michelle Aronoff. No.
This is actually, in my view, quite a phenomenal timing. The negotiations with Dis-Chem had started at least 6 or 7 years ago, or at least the interaction with Ivan. And 4 years ago, before a couple of personal events took place, which sadly took its toll on the family, it rested till about 16 months ago when Ivan and I touched base again and we decided to make a go of it. For whatever reason, and I can only believe that it's my dear dad, my dear late dad, that's been overlooking and perhaps trying to get me to break my emotion away from selling the business, which he really wanted about 4 years ago. It might have been that pressure that's been put on me. And then eventually I got 16 months ago, with not having him as a partner and the bouncing board. It was a difficult time. And I think Ivan's timing was perfect. But we were thrown at a whole lot of curveballs, which delayed the finalization of the agreements. And eventually, actually, COVID-19 facilitated the deal, because at the end of the day, we were both still on track. We still believe our synergies, and I think that if the deal goes through the legal hoops, the Competition Commission, and all the CPs are met, I think that the synergies are there. And it's some very exciting stuff that Dis-Chem is planning with me. It's super exciting. It just allowed things to happen where there is that time when, and I think I've often said to people who know me and who know what a workaholic I've been, if I could only stop the world for 24 hours. Well, with COVID-19, my world stopped for 72 hours for a while. Yeah. It really allowed things to happen. And neither of us changed our minds. Neither of us changed the terms of our agreements. And we both believe what we believe. And be it good times or bad times, we would have still gone ahead. I really believe that. What is interesting, though, is that it's proven that our businesses are resilient, our categories are resilient. Yes, there has been a change in merchandise mix. Yes, there has been a change in margin mixes. There's no doubt about it. But at the moment, everything's fluid. And as the levels are improving from level 5 to level 4 to level 3, so the shift moves from one area to another. So I don't think anyone can really give you a total view on COVID-19 and its effect. I think we'll see it probably within 3 to 6 months. But it's exciting nonetheless. The ideas of clinics, if everything goes through properly, the ideas of clinics will increase the densities in store. It will be positive from every angle. And the synergies through the distribution networks will equally be exciting. I was at a crossroad as well, to be truthful. Mm. You reach a certain level and you've got to know whether you bring in equity investors or you join a big brother and hopefully make it work. And the choice was to go with the big brother.
And the timing is magical. Michelle Aronoff, thank you for your patience. Thank you for your tolerance. And thank you for the lovely stories that you shared with us this evening about the story of Baby City. Cheers.